Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Spent a lot of time in Congress talking about the $700 billion TARP bailout, which I voted against, as it happens. Not a whole lot has been talked about with regard to the $2.2 trillion that the Fed has lent out. Now, I find that absolutely extraordinary that I wrote you a letter and I said, hey, who'd you lend the money to? What were the terms of those loans? How can my constituents in Vermont get some of that money? Who makes the decisions? Do you guys sit around in a room? Do you make it? Are there conflicts of interest? My question to you is, will you tell the American people to whom you lent $2.2 trillion of their dollars, will you tell us who got that money and what the terms are of those agreements?
We explain each of our programs. In terms of the terms, we explain the terms exactly. We explain what the collateral requirements are. We explain what
to whom did you explain that?
It's on our website.
Yeah, okay.
So all that information is available in our commercial paper program.
And who got the money?
Hundreds and hundreds of banks. Any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve's discount.
Tell us who they are.
No.
It is the Savage Nation. We've had a revolution in America where the government fundamentally has conducted a coup and will not disclose who they're giving their money to, meaning your money. Here we have a Bernie Sanders, independent Vermont, the only socialist in the Senate, asking Bernanke who got the money, and Bernanke has the nerve to say to a sitting senator, I will not disclose it. Now, if this is not an example of a banana republic at work, I'd like to know what is. I'm going to devote a little time now to a very, very important book by Sinclair Lewis called It Can't Happen Here. This book was written during the last Depression. In fact, just before the last Depression is when it came out, or during the middle of it, and copyrighted 1935. I wouldn't waste your time, but I'm not going to waste your time, because you must hear what Sinclair Lewis wrote. Now, I want to remind you, Sinclair Lewis was a socialist. He projected a future America where a right-wing government would take over the country. You hear? Where a right-wing government would take over the country. And he, in his fiction, It Can't Happen Here, Sinclair Lewis wrote, the 15 points of victory for the forgotten men written by the Democrat candidate for the United States President, Buzz Windrip. And I'm going to summarize some of these 15 points. During the very first week of his campaign, Senator Windrip clarified his philosophy by issuing his distinguished proclamation, the 15 points of victory for the forgotten men. Now, I want to remind you, this is a fiction written in 1935 about what would happen to America if a right-winger took over the country. One, all finances in the country, including banking, insurance, stocks and bonds and mortgages, shall be under the absolute control of a federal central bank owned by the government and conducted by a board appointed by the president, which board shall, without need of recourse to Congress for legislative authorization, be empowered to make all regulations governing finance. Two, the president shall appoint a commission equally divided between manual workers, employers, and representatives of the public to determine which labor unions are qualified to represent the workers. Number three, after the revolution, in contradistinction to the doctrines of red radicals. Now, remember, this was a projection of what would happen should a right-winger take over the government. In contradistinction to the doctrines of red radicals with their felonious expropriation of the arduously acquired possessions which ensure to aged persons their security, this league and party will guarantee private initiative and the right to private property for all time. Four, believing that only under God Almighty, to whom we render all homage, do we Americans hold our vast power, We shall guarantee to all persons absolute freedom of religious worship, provided, however, that no atheist, agnostic, believer in black magic, nor any Jew who shall refuse to swear allegiance to the New Testament, nor any person of any faith who refuses to take the pledge to the flag, shall be permitted to hold any public office or to practice as a teacher, professor, lawyer, judge, or as a physician, except in the category of obstetrics. 5. Annual net income per person shall be limited to $500,000. No accumulated fortune may at any one time exceed $3 million per person. No one person shall, during his entire lifetime, be permitted to retain an inheritance or various inheritances in total exceeding $2 million. All incomes or estates in excess of the sums named shall be seized by the federal government for use in relief and administrative expenses. Shall I go on? I can go on. Congress shall have the sole right to issue money, and immediately upon our inauguration, it shall at least double the present supply of money in order to facilitate the fluidity of credit. Did you hear any of this? Are you listening to me? Or you didn't hear this morning on the Blowhard show, so you don't know what you're listening to. Are you realizing what's going on here? Here it is. I'll read this to you from page 69, written in 1935. They realized that this country has gone so flabby that any gang daring enough and unscrupulous enough and smart enough not to seem illegal can grab hold of the entire government and have all the power and applause and salutes, all the money and palaces and will and women they want. They're only a handful. But just think how small Lenin's gang was at first, and Mussolini's, and Hitler's, and Kemal Pasha's, and Napoleon's. You'll see all the liberal preachers and modernist educators and discontented newspapermen and farm agitators, maybe they'll worry at first. But they'll get caught up in the web of propaganda like we all were in the Great War, and they'll all be convinced that even if our president maybe has got a few faults, he's on the side of the plain people and against all the tight old political machines, and they'll rouse the country for him as the great liberator. Did you hear any of this? But will Americans stand for it long, whimpered Emma? Oh, no, not people like us, the descendants of the pioneers. Oh, no, it can't happen here. Shall I repeat to you that it has happened here? Shall I repeat to you who has done this? Are you recognizing the fact that Sinclair Lewis, although he was frightened of a future government taken over by the right wing, did not even see himself as the prophet he was, and that this country would be taken over by a gang of left-wingers, the Obama gang? Are you aware of the fact that the country has been taken over by a gang? A daring gang, an audacious gang, the audacity of revolution. An audacious gang has taken over America. And there they are, ladies and gentlemen, printing money as though they own it, taxing the people who earn the money, and making deals with communists around the world under the guise of peace and freedom. That's my monologue for today. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. In a moment, we're going to go back to Senator Bernie Sanders grilling Federal Reserve Chairman the liar, Ben Bernanke, who I frankly would have arrested. If I were in that congressional hearing and Bernanke came before me and I asked him, where did the $2.2 trillion go? Who did you give the money to? And this guy, Bernanke, sits there like God Almighty and says, I'm not going to release the names. I would ask for U.S. Marshals to come in and arrest Bernanke. The reason Sanders didn't do it is because it's all a fix. These are show trials. Listen to clip 15 where Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve, refuses to answer where the money went in 15.
The reason that it's counterproductive and will destroy the value of the program is that banks will not come to the district.
Isn't that too bad?
Sorry?
In other words, isn't that too bad? They took the money, but they don't want to be public about the fact that they received it. We heard a whole lot about AIG. They're on the front pages.
These are very
now, I got banks and I have businesses in the state of Vermont who are in a lot of trouble. Not banks. Our banks, by the way, are doing pretty well. Now, how do these guys who are honest business people get it? Do you have to be a large, greedy, reckless financial institution to apply for these monies?
And Bernanke does not answer. He does not answer. He does not say where the money went. Ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, So here we are. I believe that we've had a coup in this country. I know that you'll say it's extremist to say so. How do you explain a government that will not disclose where they gave $2.2 trillion? How do you describe a government that is doing business with the Hitler of Iran, who has repeatedly threatened to wipe Israel off the map? How do you explain a government that sends a Hillary Clinton, who pretended to be a friend of Israel when she wanted to become a senator from New York, suddenly stabs Israel in the back? How do you explain taxes upon successful people in order to give to those who refuse to work in this country? How do you explain it? There are many ways to explain it and in many words. But the fact of the matter is the media is complicit in this takeover of the United States of America. And that is why I've read to you from Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here. That book was written in 1935 during the Great Depression, when Sinclair Lewis the socialist feared Hitler, feared Franco, feared nationalism, and projected a right-wing takeover of America. Little did he know that his fiction would one day describe the left-wing takeover of America by Barack Hussein Obama, who many people question, whose citizenship many, many millions of people are questioning. In fact, it is such a big story, and I'm not going to talk about it. Don't call me about it, okay? So many people question it that the left-wing Yahoo, the left-wing news sites like that that write for children are calling those who question Obama's official place of birth birthists or something to that effect. So it's starting to seep through to the mainstream, and it will eventually become a big story. You understand that? We have men of superior cunning and a very sly foxiness running this country. You might call them leaders. You might call them comrades. You might call them brethren. You might call them commissars. You might call them patriots. You might call them little brothers of the poor. But the fact of the matter is these men have superior cunning and very, very sly foxiness, and they are running a web around your head. I've never seen anything happen so fast in this country with a meltdown leading us to trickle-up poverty in at a speed that I never envisioned it happening. Now, I want you to take the arc of what Obama has done so far and project it ahead 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years, and ask yourself, if this man is not stopped, what this country will look like, what your family will look like, and whether your freedoms will be intact in 3 or 4 years unless this man is opposed at every turn. There was a British newspaper that published Obama's 10 strongest critics. They said Michael Savage is amongst them, and they quoted one thing I said. They quoted me correctly. They said the following. Michael Savage says that Obama has never heard anyone say no to him ever since his boyhood in Hawaii. As a result, he has a messianic complex, and he continues to do things that are disconnected from reality that simply aggrandize more and more power to himself. They got it right. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Chicago, Anthony, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I do not understand why the media fears you so much. Over the weekend, I listened to two radio stations where the callers were commenting on CPAC, and they actually beeped out your name.
Well, C-SPAN is run by a twerp by the name of Brian Lamb, who is a front for the Democrat establishment. Brian Lamb is an evil little man who exists only on taxpayer money. Brian Lamb runs C-SPAN, and the let us say, left of center, sexually and ex-Soviet Union, they had a very good idea. Anytime they had an intellectual dissident who was a giant, they simply made believe that intellectual giant who was a dissident didn't exist. They blacked that name out from the newspapers. They blacked that name out from the media. And eventually they put those names on a list, and they took those people away and put them into the Gulag Archipelago. So I'm in very good company. That a twerp like Brian Lamb would bleep my name out and you would hear it indicates just what a threat I am to them. Now, the second question, the more important, is why am I a threat to them? Isn't that the real question?
Well, we know why, because like you said before, your voice rings a truth that can't be denied. And this, the media is so terrified of you because they know that you can make such a difference. You are making such a difference.
Well, they know I stand for certain things, which they oppose. I stand for firm borders, English as the national language, and the cultural bedrock that this country was built upon, borders, language, culture. They stand for the opposite. They stand for open borders. They stand for multiple languages, and they stand for no culture other than the statist culture. So I am their natural enemy. They also understand that I'm probably the Well, let's put it to you this way. Amongst the most articulate in the media, they could never challenge me directly. If I had Brian Lamb on this show, I would chop him up to pieces. He wouldn't even fit back into his size 3 shoes when I got through with him.
Well, Dr. Savage, I have to say that I think...
Let me tell you something. A year ago, I was granted the Freedom of Speech Award by the talk radio industry, as you may know. And I gave a very important speech that they refused to run. And they refused to run it because I was already on their Stalinist list of none persons. That did not stop multiples of 10,000s of people from buying those copies of my Freedom of Speech Award. And I'm going to send you one right now, Anthony. Stay in the line. Stay in the line. Anthony gets a free copy of Michael Savage's DVD, his most important Freedom of Speech Award. Mississippi James, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'd love to know why you seem to hang all the present problems on the Obama administration and the Democrats and liberals when I feel like both parties are equally culpable in this mess we're in, and I wish...
Well, we've heard that before. You must be a new listener, and you probably didn't hear me criticizing George Bush for 7.5 years.
Oh, no, sir. I've listened to you for years.
Well, last year I called George Bush a fiscal socialist, did I not?
You did that.
All right, so don't accuse me of being partisan in this manner. However, the magnitude of socialism has been amped up to a point of no return under Obama. How in the world can you justify $2.2 trillion in spending without disclosing who got that money, unless you're a gangster?
Oh, I don't, sir. It's awful.
All right. We have a gang that took over America, but they're a very clever, cunning gang. They're not acting like a gang, are they?
No, they're not.
Well, they are. They're acting like a gang, only they're pretending to be nice guys. Quote, we can go back to the dark ages. The crust of learning and good manners and tolerance is so thin. It would just take a few thousand big bombs to wipe out all the eager young men and all the libraries and historical archives and patent offices, all the laboratories and art galleries, all the castles and Periclean temples and Gothic cathedrals, all the cooperative stores and motor factories, every storehouse of learning. No inherent reason why your grandchildren, if anybody's grandchildren will survive at all, shouldn't be living in caves and heaving rocks at catamounts. Sinclair Lewis, it can't happen here. My friends, it is happening here.
Savage.
So we have a share the wealth advocate named Barack Hussein Obama, a revolutionary, a trickle-up poverty man. And if you think this is new, you are mistaken. Where it ends, though, is also not new. There was John Ball, who in 1381 was a share the wealth advocate. John Ball in the year 1381 in England preached equality of wealth. He preached the abolition of class distinctions and what would now be called communism. And what happened? Well, he had a follower named Wat Tyler who looted London. He looted London. 300 years later, Cromwell's methods became apparent. He established the shooting, slashing, clubbing, starving, and burning of people. And after him, the workers of England paid for the spree of bloody righteousness with blood itself. This is very serious business because we remember the French Revolution. Even those of us who never went past high school remember vaguely there was a revolution in France that consumed a good portion of the population. Perhaps you remember the names Marat and Danton and Robespierre. They helped shift control of France from the moldy old aristocrats to the stuffy, penny-pinching shopkeepers. And Russia, Lenin and Trotsky gave to the illiterate Russian peasants the great privileges of punching a time clock. And Lenin's man Borodin, who went to China and introduced this idea. And then in America, there was William Randolph Hearst, who in 1898 switched the mastery of Cuba from the Spaniards to what it became then. And then, of course, in America, we had similar attempts at equality of wealth. There are many, many examples. They were all utopians. They all led to disaster. And what happened? Cecil Rhodes had a vision of making South Africa a British paradise. The actuality was he made it into a graveyard for British soldiers. There was Brook Farm, another utopia. There was Robert Owens' Sanctuary of Chatter. There was Upton Sinclair's Helicon Hall, right? All of these were utopian visions. And how did they all end? They all ended in scandal, feuds, poverty, grimness, griminess, and disillusion. Every one of them. And so we now have a young, articulate rabble-rouser named Obama. And this articulate rabble-rouser is espousing a message that I call trickle-up poverty. And now people are starting to catch on to the fact that he is a trickle-up poverty kind of guy. Where it ends? I know where it ends because I've studied history. I know where it ends. The signal as to when this begins, when the end begins, will be when he organizes a militia directly under his own control. He will not call it a militia. It will be called perhaps the Ecology Corps, or the Environment Corps, or the Global Warming Corps, or the Energy Corps. Whatever it will be called, they will all wear uniforms. They will either be blue denim or green denim. They will have the executive power under the urban czar to come into your home without any court order to investigate your energy use, but they'll be looking for other things as well. Would you have any chance to stand up to this army of Obamaites? Oh, is this all madness? Have I gone over the edge? Wait and see. Because I've gone over the edge before, and every time I have, I've been right eventually. I see the handwriting on the wall. I know where this is going. Obama is a dictator. Obama has never had anyone say no to him. Obama, I'm going to remind you again, is a man who grew up in Hawaii. Hawaii is a wonderful place in many ways. It was filled at the time he was growing up with rather wealthy, far-left white people who literally worshipped a certain type of personality. Obama was that personality. They got on their hands and knees to Obama. They smoothed the skids for Obama. They had him out to salons in Kailua in Hawaii. They mentored Obama in the ways of the left. They made sure he got a scholarship to Ponohu. They made sure he got into Harvard. Every step of the way, the skids were greased and no one said no to him. Now that he is president and cannot believe it himself, he now wants to become the Messiah of the world. And so he is talking about a global New Deal. Now that was yesterday. Today he denied it. They ran it up the flagpole so that you'd go, wow, that's okay. He's not really as bad as we think. You don't understand that it's all a strategy of Rahm Emanuel. In other words, if they ratchet up the fear and then take it back down a notch, you're happy with how far he's pushed and that he didn't go any further. That's the game they're playing. But they're dealing with a master psychologist called Michael Savage. Make no mistake about it. I may have no power whatsoever. I may have no access to the media whatsoever. But I have you. You stopped the Dubai ports deal. You stopped McCain and Kennedy from granting amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens. You stopped the appointment of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court under George Bush. You did some many, many good things. So don't assume you are powerless. The people who have made you powerless are the Republicans themselves. Make no mistake about that as well. That is why they ran this fraudulent little event on the weekend called the Conservative Political Action Convention. Well, it was a nice gathering, I am sure. But how many people there heard the words borders, language, or culture? I listened to the speeches. All I heard were, we've got to return to conservative principles. We've got to get those Democrats out of power. Really? What are the conservative principles, Mr. Romney? He didn't disclose any. Just as Bernanke will not disclose where the $2.2 trillion went, neither will Romney articulate what conservative principles are. Because truthfully, there's no difference between the two parties. Borders, language, culture. Now, I address this to my entire audience. Don't assume that I become number three in the United States of America this late in the day. And remember, I want to repeat to you, this show starts fairly late on the East Coast and in late afternoon on the West Coast. And consequently, the audiences are smaller than they would be if the show started, for example, at noon on the East Coast. There's a much larger day part audience. And so consider this, although I'm not on the largest stations in America, in most cities, and although I'm not on in the daytime when most people listen to talk radio, nevertheless, this little show has become number three in the country. What is that based upon? Tell me what it's based upon. Mere entertainment? or something else. And so I addressed to my larger audience, which consists, I'm sure, of many, many Democrats, many, many people who consider themselves independents, many, many people who call themselves liberals, etc. I appeal to all of you to understand what has happened. I cannot comprehend how you liberals don't understand that a dictatorship, whether it be a left-wing dictatorship or a right-wing dictatorship, is not going to be good for your children. I cannot comprehend how you can be sitting here cheering for Obama, who by all intents and purposes is a dictator. Someone has to oppose this man. The Republicans are not capable of it. They are a supine, invisible force. They are not a force at all. They can be bought off for 30 pieces of silver. It is up to the American people to say no to Obama. Again, I ask you, if this man has done so much damage in so short a period of time, I want you to project ahead 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, and you tell me you think your child or your grandchild is going to have the freedoms that you had. Let's talk about freedom versus slavery. Let's talk about individual liberty versus the state telling you what to do from morning until night. You tell me Obama and his minions do not want to control you from the cradle to the grave? I would disagree with you. Kansas City, Joe, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I just wanted to let you know that I am a liberal. I've been a liberal for 52 years. I've seen 11 different presidents, several different administrations. I do have to agree with you that I think the primary importance in this country right now is borders, language, and culture. And you might find it shocking to believe that a liberal might be saying that, but I do agree with that.
Well, let's not define terms for a moment because we may not get anywhere. How in the world can you back Obama as a liberal when he would not even sign off on the Buy American clause?
I did not say I backed Obama. I did not vote for him. I did not back him.
Well, don't tell me you voted for McCain as a liberal.
No, as a matter of fact, I wrote in Al Gore.
Oh, well, that's another story. I mean, I understand that Al Gore is nowhere to be found in the midst of the worst winter we've had in years, because it would disprove his, it would just prove that he's a whack job. But okay, I understand what you're saying. But borders, language, and culture is the essence of the conversation. So what are you going to do when Obama says, I hereby, with the stroke of a pen, declare 30 million people from the from Mexico and Central America immediate citizens? What are you going to do then?
I'm going to join your forces, and I'm going to fight as hard as I can against it, because I don't believe in it. I agree with what you've had to say for many, many years about the illegals, and to be honest with you, I think that's one of the major problems in this country right now.
That's right. They have suppressed wages. They've bankrupted hospitals. They've destroyed our educational system. They've destroyed our medical system. It's like a band of locusts have come over this country. Nobody is talking about the devastation on this land conducted by non-citizens. And by the way, we have been paying the price of the wreckage that these illegal aliens have caused in this country. And I'll go to the next step. If you think that the drugs coming over the border, and if you think the violence spilling over the border is not a direct result of the two political parties not stopping the illegal aliens, I would disagree with you, my friend. It's part and parcel with the devastation occurring on the borderlands.
Well, I have to say that I think the demonization of both parties is not doing this country any good at all. And I think we need to cool down the rhetoric, to be honest with you.
Well, that's a separate story. I think we need to ratchet up the rhetoric. I think both parties are corrupt, and I think both parties are incapable of leading America through the Red Sea. I think we need a new party and a new leader. I think both of them are a gang of thieves. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Talking about trickle-up poverty on the Savage Nation. We're talking about the world turned upside down. We're talking about Obama's administration, which seems to be the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States. Remember, you want a fact? He has tried to nominate a total of 5 tax dodgers to date. Now, imagine if John McCain had won, who I did not vote for, by the way, or I may have, who knows if I voted for him, I don't even remember. I supported him at the last minute because I feared the deluge of Obama. Yes, I did support McCain, and I did vote for him now that I think of it. But imagine if McCain had won. As bad as he was as a candidate, as a fake conservative as there is one, it was John McCain, Do you think that John McCain would have been given the pass that the media is giving Obama? No. And that's because most people in the media are broke. Most people in the media are basically penniless. Most people in the media are losing their jobs. And most people in the media are diehard communists, which is why they support the communist slash socialist agenda that you are living through right now in the Savage Nation. You follow me? The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I've temporarily lost call The Savage Nation, my New York Times bestseller. And I want to read you one paragraph. And here it is. Not all immigrants are the same. I warn you, I suffer from the truth in mouth syndrome. What do you want from me? I'm the son of an immigrant who happens to be able to distinguish those who come to America to work hard and honor our heritage and from those who will do us harm. Look at the immigrants from Japan. For the most part, they make good citizens. They come and apply themselves to learning the language. They take the oath of loyalty to our country. They study hard, they get solid jobs, and they make a contribution to our society. The same thing could be said of the immigrants arriving from India. I could go on down the list of other countries whose people come to our shores with an attitude of gratitude. They're thankful to be here. But then you've got the immigrants who sneak, cheat, or lie their way into America. Once they've set foot on the soil, they immediately apply for welfare benefits. These leeches make no effort to learn English. In fact, they take pride in not learning our language. They demand health care, and they refuse to abide by the laws, preferring even to go to jail. Why? Because American jails provide a better life than many experience back home in the third world countries from which they fled. This will shock you, but it's a fact. And by the way, this book was published soon after I became a national host in 2002. This will shock you, but it's a fact. 25 to 30% of all prisoners in our jails today are illegal immigrants. Now, I will repeat that over and over again. Approximately 1 out of 3 prisoners in our federal prisons are illegal immigrants. Did that come up at the CPAC convention? Has that been discussed by Obama and what that's costing us? Have the Republicans dared raise the issue? Of course not. So I'm trying to tell you that I am not enamored of the CPAC people, and I'm not enamored of the Republican Party. Now, if you care to comment, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you prefer, what I'll do is read you another piece from my next book in the quatrain. The next book is called The Enemy Within, Saving America from the Liberal Assault on Our Schools, Faith, and Military. I know hundreds of thousands of you bought these books in hardcover, each of the books in hundreds of thousands. This came out a year later in 2003. I'll read you one paragraph. America is heading for a fatal social crash, I warn in this book. Did you hear that? America is heading for a fatal social crash. Well, guess what? Is America heading for a fatal social crash, or has it had one? Did I overstate the danger there? Did I say, when I wrote this, with the sanctimonious zealots driving public policy, the homeless are the sacred cows of the streets, the sexual deviants are the teacher's pets, the lawyers twist the system in favor of the criminals, the churches are silenced while the courts legislate immorality, and patriots and police are censored while dung slingers are subsidized? I wrote that in 2002. Was I wrong? Does that explain to you, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, why, even though I have 4 bestsellers in a row, even Laura Bush, the librarian, refused to acknowledge my existence? Does it not explain to you that the two parties are fundamentally a single one-party system? Does it not explain to you when I called George Bush a fiscal socialist approximately 1 year ago that I saw this coming, this train wreck of our economy? I saw it coming. And I'm afraid to tell you that what you see now is only the beginning, not the end. If you think that we are at the end of the beginning, you're mistaken. We are not even at the beginning of the end. And I know that people are re-quoting Churchill all the time. I am telling you that I see the picture very, very clearly. We have a revolutionary who has taken over America. Try to envision the 1960s all over again. Let's say you're in your 50s. I want you to go back to the Black Panthers of the 1960s, and I want you to try to revisit some of the rhetoric. Now, take away the hate, take away the anger, take away the threats, take away the fist, take away the guns, and the rhetoric of the 1960s that H. Rap Brown put out is being enacted by Obama's minions right now. I don't think you understand that the far left is conducting a revolution in the United States of America right now. San Francisco, KNEW, Lance, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, congratulations, Dr. Savage. You made Sean Hannity say your name. I saw it on TV the other night. Now, you asked, why do you...
Wait. Why would the wall banger mention me? He's terrified of me.
You're number three.
The wall banger was forced to acknowledge that?
Yep, you're number three.
Well, I'm shocked. My hat's off to the wall banger. So what's on your mind?
Why do you succeed in this non-primetime slot? It comes down to quality ideas, perspectives based on history, a wide-ranging vocabulary that keeps people interested. It's fantastic.
Well, I'm very honored that you would say that. I have a very high number of college graduates who listen to the show, I think higher than anyone in radio, and I don't want to harp on that, because you don't need to have a college degree to be inherently smart. You don't need to have a higher degree in order to be intelligent. There are people with native intelligence who know just what is going on, Lance, and they also listen to the show.
So, Michael, you're serving as an educator. You said that you've been shut out of the universities. This is the finest platform you could ever have hoped for.
Well, the universities are a long time ago. I'm just giving that as an example of what the social engineers did then. But the fact of the matter is, if I have 850,000 people in any quarter hour, which is about what it is the last I checked, 8 to 10 million listeners a week, think about how large the classroom would have to be to encompass 850,000 people in 15 minutes. This is the largest classroom any professor could ever dream of. So I understand the responsibility and how great it is. Trust me on that. I want to take a diversion. I have 30 seconds to do it. Last night I was cooking after the show, and I was so upset by the politics of the day that I burnt my hand in the stove. It was a 400-degree hot stove, and I went to get a chicken out of it. I burnt my hand. It was such a bad burn that I could smell like burning skin, like chicken skin. I went out and got an aloe vera leaf, and I put it on this finger, which hurt me for 3 hours. Do you know that after 3 hours, that piece of aloe vera turned hot to the touch? I'll tell you more about herbal medicine when I come back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is there any outer limit on the federal government's ability to borrow money?
Certainly there are outer limits.
What are they and how close are we to them?
Well, it's hard to judge in any kind of explicit way since we don't know.
This budget also seeks to close the tax gap by tackling tax shelters and other efforts to abuse our tax laws, including on the international front. Over the next several months, the president will propose a series of legislative and enforcement actions to reduce tax avoidance.
We're all living in America, America, it's wunderbar. We're all living in America, America, America.
Wenn die Tänzer will ich führen.
It can't happen here, huh? It can't happen here, huh? It can't happen here, huh? Huh? It can't happen? It can't happen here, huh? Huh? It can't happen here, huh? Huh? You can't say it can't happen here, huh? Huh? You think it can happen here, huh? Huh? Well, I think it has happened here. I think that we have a gang that's taken over America. I think that they're running the country like a gang. I realize that these are very harsh words, but we have a very harsh situation on our hands. And I seem to see that all the nice men in America are not getting very far in their criticism of this gang. And so therefore I say, when I see all the finance in this country going into the hands of a few men who will not disclose where the money is going, I think it's time for all the nice men to step aside and let all of the men who are a little, let us say, rough around the edges, those of us who grew up in the gutter, to stand up and say no to this dictatorship. 999, stand up to the Obama dictatorship. New York City, WOR. Bernie, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. Listen, now the way you presented Bernanke's no to Senator Bernie Sanders really doesn't capture what happened. Bernanke explained that all the banks under the Federal Reserve are eligible, but that he would not give the names because that might lead people to question the solvency of the banks. You remember what happened when Charles...
Wait, let's slow down. In other words, if the people were actually to know which banks were weak, they might be smart enough to withdraw their money. This way, the schmucks will sit and wait until the banks go under when the government no longer has money to give them, and they'll lose everything. I understand what you're saying. In other words, see if you can shear the feathers off everybody right down to the end.
Bernie,
listen to me. You're not alleging that the banks are healthy, are you? The ones who are taking this the ones who have taken the $2.2 trillion, are you?
No, I don't know this.
Let's be reasonable together. You're not arguing that some banks are not healthier than others, are you? I mean, some are healthier than others. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
So why shouldn't we let the weak banks fail?
Because of the crisis that it would cause.
Wait a minute. But covering up a crisis is exactly how American medicine works. American medicine doesn't cure disease. American medicine covers up disease. And what happens is the disease festers. I am trained in holistic medicine, not American Medical Association standards of burn, cut, and poison. I am not trained to cover up illness. I'm trained to look at the actual cause of the disease. And my friend, just plastering over a rotting timber does not save that timber. The timber continues to rot. What you have to do is cut out the rot and sister the beam, my friend.
During the 1930s, the Federal Reserve sat on its hands and let the banks go under, and we ended up with a worldwide collapse of trade and a 10-year depression.
Hold on. We agree on that. So you're telling me that by taking taxpayer money and propping up failed financial institutions, we are ultimately going to prevent this from happening?
We don't know.
We don't know. So keep printing money. Now, you're an intelligent man who's obviously read on this and maybe even lived through it in some regard. You know and I know that when you print $2.2 trillion, what you're doing is diluting the value of the dollar. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
All right. Are you not concerned about the inflation, the hidden inflation that's being created by these policies?
He answered that, too. He said, Bernanke said, that he is concerned about the inflation, but during a deflation in which we are now, and he's trying to stop because it has terrible consequences, that he will, if he sees that inflation raises its ugly head again, he will then raise interest rates. But he has to see what's going to happen.
So you're totally confident that this man, Mr. Barbasol Shave, knows what he's doing?
Listen, I think that he is an authority on the Depression. That's where he's taking his lessons from.
Wait a minute, my friend. Let's go back to the Great Depression. What caused the meltdown of the stock market in 1929?
And probably it was the Smoot-Hawley tariff that...
Wait a minute. It was rampant speculation with nothing down. In other words, it was the equivalent of the hedge funds of today. The George Soros idea of a hedge fund, for example, and those in the hedge fund business are part and parcel of the entire problem we're having now. They're wild gamblers with other people's money. Also, short selling. You have to agree that short selling is not healthy for the economy, or do you disagree with that as well?
I don't know. That I don't necessarily agree with. Like, I don't agree with a lot of things. But the fact is that...
Wait, hold it. You don't agree with my statement, or you don't agree with short selling as a fiduciary instrument?
No, I don't find nothing wrong with short selling.
You don't?
No.
So in other words, when a guy like George Soros almost broke the Bank of England by betting against the pound, that was okay by you?
He won.
And when George Soros almost destroyed the Malaysian currency by betting against the Malaysian currency, that was also okay, even though it fomented anti-Semitism and anti-Americanism, that was also okay?
Listen, you don't have to foment anti-Semitism. It's out there anyway.
Well, let's not get carried away. That's already trying to put off the reality of what George Soros has done. No, you can foment and you can aggravate situations. You know that and I know that. But let's put aside the racial implications here. Let us deal with financial implications. I personally disagree with your viewpoint. I personally believe that you did not buy your way out of a depression. I do not believe you tax your way out of a depression. I believe you have to permit certain big businesses to tumble. You must let them fail. You must let the weakest banks fail. You must let the weakest insurance companies fail. There is no limit to the bailouts. Even he said that today.
The experience of the Depression indicates that we should not just let everything fail. That had a disastrous effect in the 30s, and we should not repeat it now.
Yeah, but I think that what the government is doing now is actually fomenting the next crash. I think they're going to make it much worse. By the way, Bernie, you're calling from New York, and I don't mean to be a wise guy, but you're not calling from a certain $7 million penthouse, are you?
No. Not at all.
Let me see if I can gauge your temperature right now. How do you feel about Bernie, Madoff, saying that he should keep $62 million because it's in his wife's name?
He's a crook. And has nothing to do.
Well, thank God we agree. Thank God we agree on something. I was afraid you're going to tell me it's okay because it's in his wife's name.
Oh no, crook! Suppose he had made real investments and lost it. What would you then say?
Well, he didn't make real investments and lose it. Did he make real investments? Allegedly, he made no investments. He just took the money and used it in the Ponzi scheme.
So that's why I say he's a crook.
But what about his wife? Do you think she was complicit in it?
I don't know. I have no.
I understand. Bernie, you know, I do appreciate your thoughtfulness. And although we disagree, I disagree with you thoroughly on Bernanke. I think he is an incompetent. And so let's ask one last question of each other, if I may. I'll do the asking. You can then ask me or answer if you wish. When I listen to the Treasury Secretary, Geithner, I get the feeling that he is way over his head. He sounds like a little boy in man's pants. What about you?
To tell you the truth, I haven't listened to Geithner. I'm waiting to see. I do listen to Bernanke. I consider him everything he says is reasoned. I've seen him attacked by Ron Paul and to turn Ron Paul time and again on his head. And again, with Bernie Sanders, who now...
But wait a minute. Bernanke said that he may need more than the approved $700 billion to fix banks. Don't you understand that they're bailing out their friends? Doesn't that register with you, Bernie?
I don't know about that.
What do you mean you don't know about that? Just take a look at Bank of America. Take a look at Citibank. Look at the people who have profited in these bailouts. They haven't given up any of their perks, Bernie.
Listen,
you're not asking them to tighten their belts. I want you to listen to Geithner in clip one just for a minute. Play clip one.
This budget also seeks to close the tax gap by tackling tax shelters and other efforts to abuse our tax laws, including on the international front. Over the next several months, the president will propose a series of legislative and enforcement actions to reduce tax avoidance.
Bernie, you've been around a long time. Does this sound like a man to you who knows what he's talking about?
I'm not a financial expert, but let me...
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, now you're not a financial expert. You called the show challenging the fundamental... statements that I made today, the most fundamental statements, that we have a gang that took over America, they're bankrupting the country, they're creating runaway inflation, they're answering to nobody, they're bailing out cronies, and now you suddenly don't have any expertise in finances? Come on, Bernie.
I have the general picture. I don't know what he's planning to do, and I don't have the knowledge to really say yes or no, but I'm telling you, I listen to Bernanke, and he's a reasonable man. and he's getting...
I think he's a crook who should be in an orange jumpsuit, along with the previous gentleman who sat in that chair, along with the previous gentleman's wife who works for NBC. I think they're all part and parcel of the same propagandist regime. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're arguing over to what extent this administration doesn't know what it's doing. In other words, no one thinks they know what they're doing. It's just that some think that they may know a little bit more about what they're not doing than others. I personally think they don't know what they're doing. I believe that they're doing it on the fly. I believe they're making it up as they go along. I believe that Obama is a green president who had no capacity for this job. And I believe he has surrounded himself with even greener greenhorns than himself. I frankly don't know who's in charge of our financial situation. I have a feeling that I know that it's a man like George Soros who's not even in the government. Now, why do I say that? I say that for a couple of reasons. Soros, as you well know, hates America, in my opinion. George Soros despises the Republican Party. George Soros has plotted for at least 10 years, so far as I can tell, to see a Democrat takeover of America. And a far-left Democratic Party, by the way, that he controls to a certain extent. As you know, George Soros spent $36 million of his own money to defeat George Bush in 04, and it was thrown away money. He lost. Now, George Soros is a very clever man, a very smart money changer in the Temple of Commerce, as you well know. Someone, in my opinion, that the Bible warned us against. Don't underestimate the man, and don't underestimate his power or his reach. George Soros runs a hedge fund. He also runs a financial empire. It's strange to me that I reported last week doing some digging that while most hedge funds in the world lost a big amount of money last year, his hedge fund, or the Soros fund per se, reported a net gain of 8%. Now, how is that possible? If Buffett lost money, if the Gates Foundation lost money, if everyone lost money in the big leagues except him, something is amiss, my friends. Moreover, what effect is Soros having on Bernanke? What effect is Soros' thinking or actions having upon Obama? We don't know because he's not in the government. He doesn't have to answer to anybody. So there are forces behind the apparent players. He is only one of them. There are probably many, many others. The bottom line is that they all have one goal and one vision. And that goal and vision is the... let me use the proper phrase here so you don't take it the wrong way. That vision is the dissolution of our sovereignty. Now, what I mean by that is the dissolution of our borders, language, and culture. But they're not alone in that. The Republicans were working on that at least for 8 years. George Bush was no friend of our borders. He was no friend of our language. George Bush was a modest friend of our culture, but too modest as far as I am concerned. What Obama has done here is tried to turn the world upside down in a scarce 2 months. Upside down. He has appointed a total of 5 tax dodgers to date. The most recent, Ron Kirk, Obama's trade representative, owes $10,000 in back taxes. Hillary, appointed by Obama, is starting negotiations with Syria and calling for a Palestinian nation. Gordon Brown, the socialist prime minister of England, is bringing Britain's socialism to America and demanding that Obama join him in an international New Deal where we bail out every country on earth. In 1781, I want to remind you, when the British Army under the command of General Cornwallis surrendered to the Americans at Yorktown, the British Army played a tune called "The World Turned Upside Down." It seems to me that it's time to play it again. I believe Obama has turned the world upside down. I believe that Obama is a natural disaster for the freedom-loving people of this country, and I believe that you can do nothing about it, and the only thing that can save us now is an act of God himself. Houston, Texas, Matt, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I think once again Obama has proven himself to be a fake and a phony. I was shocked to hear about his secretive letters to Russia in regards to them helping us with Iran and us phasing back on our Eastern European missile defense system.
Well, I reported on that yesterday, but Obama denied it today. He has the, today he said he didn't do it.
Oh, my gosh. Those are the same countries that he went on his glamorous rock star tour to try to impress.
Well, you didn't think he went there for no reason, did you?
Boy, it just seems like he's not only sold out the American people, but now he's selling out the Europeans who were there to come out.
Why not? New World Order, one world government with the Messiah at the head of it.
Savage.
I now have to shift gears on the Savage Nation. I don't want to be too egg-headed, but there's a new story out that rotting eggs are the new Viagra. Now, I know you say this is crazy, but it was actually investigated. And the Italian scientists, of all people, report that the smell of rotting eggs gives men an erection. Listen to this craziness. It's a bizarre finding, I admit it. Let me repeat it. They say that the smell of rotting eggs gives men an erection, and that this could help develop a more effective version of the sex drug Viagra. You see, it's a gas called hydrogen sulfide that's also released when eggs rot, and incidentally also released from the exhausts of cars with catalytic converters. But it's also given out by men just before they have sex. Yes, hydrogen sulfide. Tiny amounts of it are released by nerve cells in a man's private part to prepare it for intercourse, the study found. This gas, hydrogen sulfide, causes muscle cells in the region to relax, boosting blood flow and leading to a better erection. Viagra, though, harnesses a different chemical, nitric oxide, that gives users a boost in those parts. And they say that this discovery from the University of Naples in Italy made the finding in a study of eight men who had sex change operations. Well, all right. Study leader Professor Giuseppe Cirino said, "We found that hydrogen sulfide is involved in human penile erection." Well, I would say it's, first of all, a study of eight men is not a large enough study, number one. And men who donate themselves, go for a sex change operation may not be the norm. But all right, he says that the hydrogen sulfide pathway represents a new therapeutic target for erectile dysfunction, and it should be possible in future to develop drugs that either deliver hydrogen sulfide or that control the hydrogen sulfide production. And the research was published in the scientific journal, The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Some readers have commented. A man says, "I can tell you right now I do not get an erection from smelling rotten eggs." A woman writes and says, "So that's where I've been going wrong, thinking all along that a nice perfume would turn a man on when I should have brought rotten eggs to the party." So there it is. That's the science of today coming out of Italy. But what do you expect from scientists in Naples who study men who volunteer for sex change operations? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. This makes no sense to me. A gas called hydrogen sulfide released when eggs rot is given out by men just before they have sex. Where is it given out from? I mean, I don't want to talk about this, but I'm a man. I mean, I've been around a certain number of years. I never experienced such an aroma. I'll let it go. That's all. Let's go to the callers. That's all there is to it. Okay? Hawaii, Daniel, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm 22 years old, and I am absolutely terrified for my country. I'm wondering, under what premise or guise, if this does happen, Obama will bring this country under a full-on dictatorship?
What do you mean, under what guise? Well, he's already doing it in the financial sector. He's nationalizing the banks. He's nationalizing some insurance companies. They're talking of nationalizing, in other words, the auto industry. What's next? The media? The media is going under. Maybe they'll say they're going to bail out the newspapers, and perhaps the editor of the Honolulu Advertiser will have to call up Bonnie Frank, or worse yet, Neil Abercrombie, to find out what he can print in the newspaper.
I believe that's the turning point. I believe that is coming, the nationalization of the media. Not that it already seems that it is that way when you watch MSNBC and those channels, so it wouldn't be that big of a...
Well, they have perverts on. I mean, how much further do you have to go than that? I mean, the difference between the deviants on MSNBC and the government deviants is not that far. I wouldn't worry about a marginal station like that with no listenership. I'm concerned about major league newspapers that are going out of business, who are going to come to Washington for a handout, and the government will be only too glad to give it, because there are no one saying no to the people in the government. Sure, write a check to the newspapers now and let another little dimwitted bureaucrat have some fun with another industry.
That's the turning point. That was my question. I believe once that happens,
the media will be the turning point. Although the media is 96% in favor of the radical Obama's policies, they are not yet 100% in favor of Obama's socialist policies. The day that the government bails out the media is the day you know we've lost the country. That will be the final determinant. Thank you for the call. Jimmy in New York, WOR. Jimmy, always a pleasure to hear from you. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, you're so right about this threat of world government. You know, 2,500 years ago, Sun Tzu wrote the book, The Art of War, and he said armed conflict is the most primitive form of warfare. Then he laid out other ways to defeat a country or weaken it before the attack. The Soviets have also built a huge military, and we had one too. So the Soviets then started writing about, and I have it from the Soviet press, they talked about the peaceful transition to socialism through electoral means. And they talked about the Popular Front, the United Front. I've described that as homo-Leninist, Afro-Leninist, Enviro-Leninist. And with all of that radical Marxist-led groups pulled together, they vote in a Marxist, and we have it right before our eyes. It's absolutely incredible.
So, Jimmy, you agree with me that everything Obama is doing is neo-Marxist. Is that correct?
Right. We call it Obamanomics. It's a subversive form of economics, that...
Wait, in the years that Bush was in power, we kept hearing sneers coming from the media about the neocons, right? Neoconservatives. I have been trying to alert America, like Paul Revere himself, by using the term neo-Marxist or neo-Marxism. You're an expert on communism because I know you've called the show many times over the last many years. I think you agree with me that by every definition, these people meet that definition.
They do. I call them Obaminists. They're secret communists and they're dupes, but collectively they're pushing us toward the point where there may be no return. You know,
Is he suddenly cozying up to Syria, Iran, and Russia?
Well, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya were all Soviet allies. The Soviets are behind the Muslim terrorism. So, and the communists and the Muslim radicals were behind Obama. So they naturally would be working together.
How could so many normal, decent liberals in the Democrat Party not see what you see and I see?
Some of them do, but they may tend to be the older ones. You know, I'm more mad right now at the conservatives. You know, we all talk about political correctness, which is basically Marxist mind control. But the political correctness among Republicans annoys me the most. That's the idea that we defeated the Soviet Union, the Cold War's over, and hence communism's over. The worst thing to do is to not know your enemy is there and what they're doing. We're not going to recover until we realize we made some kind of mistake thinking Reagan outsmarted the Soviet Union. This is not what happened. This is absolutely not what happened.
Let's not go with Reagan. I want to stick to one thing now. Do you think Obama will at any point be opposed by both parties?
I think the people and lower level, but the top of both parties is kind of like globalist world government type. I don't know that they're going to all of a sudden become patriotic Americans. You can't be a decent person and get to the top in these two parties, it seems like to me. NAFTA, GATT, the UN, the North American Union, this is all the attempt to make world government. The communist part of it was through violence, but now they're converging where the Soviet side fakes collapse, therefore there's no threat there. They work with the American globalists, and when you put it all together, we're heading...
When I read from Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, did it resonate with you?
You know what? I don't really remember enough about that to make an intelligent comment on it. I'm sorry.
Well, I read it at the beginning of the last hour. You probably just tuned in. I appreciate it. Well, one last question, since you're a student of paranoia, and it doesn't mean that you're wrong, by the way, because any man who's not paranoid about what Obama and his minions are doing is absolutely a crazy man. The man has taken control of most of the financial institutions of America in less than 2 months. Is that not correct?
That is correct. And remember, it was paranoid people who put smoke alarms in apartments and fire escapes in buildings. So it's not paranoia.
Right. I'm reading to you from a fiction called It Can't Happen Here, written in 1935 by Sinclair Lewis, when he projected a fantasy of a right-wing government taking over America. And in this book, he projects the 15 points of victory for the forgotten men written by the right-winger who would take over America. But astonishingly, most of them are being enacted by Obama. One, all finance in the country, including banking, insurance, stocks and bonds and mortgages, shall be under the absolute control of a federal central bank owned by the government and conducted by a board appointed by the president, et cetera. Does that sound more or less of what Obama's done so far?
Right. It sounds like Marxism.
Okay. There are several other in the 15 points of this nightmare. And here's another one. Annual net income per person shall be limited to $500,000. No accumulated fortune may at any one time exceed $3 million per person. No one person shall during his entire lifetime be permitted to retain an inheritance or various inheritances in total exceeding $2 million. All incomes or estates in excess of the sums named shall be seized by the federal government for use in relief and in administrative expenses. Now, those numbers were written in 1935. So let's say that we make $500,000, $5 million. We make $3 million, $30 million. We make a lifetime inheritance of $2 million into $20 million. Is that not foreseeable under the Obama administration if he's not stopped in the next few months?
Well, I think he's going to be harsher than that. That may be the starting point because that sounds more acceptable. But that's just, you know, the beginning of the process until they clamp down totally and we have a total dictatorship. That's the way you would do it. It would have to be gradualism. I call it revolution by evolution. It's a slow-motion process, which we see now. 80 years of Marxist work in America, we have one of them leading us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my friend, thanks for the call. This is the Savage Nation. If you care to comment on any of this or any other news topic, including rotten eggs and erections, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
The deepening recession is putting greater pressure on banks. And in response, many banks are pulling back on credit. So right now, critical parts of our financial system are working against recovery. And this is a dangerous dynamic, and to arrest it, we need to make sure that our banks...
All right, this is the boy, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, who I am sure if he was taken out of this government job and he was told, look, there's a guy on 43rd Street in 7th Avenue who has a souvlaki stand, that he bought from a Greek, and he's from Nigeria, and we're giving him a job. But from now on, you're going to run this hot dog stand. You have to get up at 4 in the morning. You have to go buy the hot dogs and the mustard and the sauerkraut. You have to make sure that the hot dogs are hot and not burn. You have to make sure that the mustard is cold but not frozen. You have to push it in the cold and the snow in order to make a living and to pay the bills, including the place you store the hot dog stand at night. I'm sure Timothy Geithner would break down in tears and have a nervous breakdown within 24 hours. Yet he is running our economy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm convinced he's just a front man for people who do know exactly what they're doing. But that's one man's opinion. We also have the government media complex deceiving you in the form of, I think, the most deceitful person in the media. The number one most deceitful person in the media, who never should have been given a job, is Andrea Mitchell from MSNBC. And the reason I pick on her is because she was married to the former Federal Reserve Chairman for many, many years. You talk about a classic government media complex. It doesn't get any worse in terms of a conflict of interest. So she was the front mouth for his machinations behind the scenes. And of course, she's deeply entrenched in the Hillary machine. Listen to this in clip 29.
Here in the Middle East, Hillary Clinton is putting the pedal to the metal, trying to do something about Middle East peace. But
let's stop right there. She's putting the pedal to the metal. So Hillary Clinton, the deceiver, the great deceiver, comes from Arkansas. She is a carpetbagger, comes to New York, establishes a shaky residency as a carpetbagger, wins the Senate seat because she's a very capable rhetorician, and the people in New York are about as gullible as they come. The interesting thing about New Yorkers, and I'm an ex-New Yorker, notice I say ex with pride, is that most New Yorkers are extremely gullible in that they're so egotistical that they think that they know everything and nobody can fool them, when in fact, as you well know by Bernie Madoff's list of clients, they're the most easily fooled. They go after shadows, they go after ghosts, they go after boogeymen, but the true villains, they have no idea who they are, and they're often taken in by them. So the carpetbagger comes to New York and bamboozles them into thinking she represents them, and they vote her into office. She takes RFK Jr.'s seat. And she becomes a senator from New York, giving the rhetoric in the synagogues about Israel and the sacred nature of the great relationship and blah, 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 and so on. And therefore, Sheep's Head Bay is 100% behind her. The minute she becomes Secretary of State under the neo-Marxist Obama administration and the marching orders are for the New World Order, which is what she wanted all along anyway, she suddenly tells the people from New York that she no longer backs them or their interests in Israel or in other things to do with Israel. She wants not only $900 million for rebuilding Gaza, which we're going to pay for, and most of which will wind up in the hands of Hamas and weapons, but she also wants to see a two-state solution, whether Israel wants it or not. And yet, again, the very same people who think they're smarter than God himself from New York, who put her in power, don't realize that they've been bamboozled, nor will they admit it. Why? I don't have an answer for that other than sheer arrogance and sheer blindness. I have no other answer for that. Savannah in Tulsa, Oklahoma, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Wonderful to talk to you. Wonderful. But anyway, I am, I'm a young girl. Woman, whatever. I'm 27. And frankly, I'm pissed off. I'm so pissed off with what they're doing. They're just trashing our country, and they have been.
Yes, they are. They are trashing our country in plain English. They have assumed powers that are not permitted by the U.S. Constitution. They have abridged constitutional restrictions on their power grab, and yet because there is no Republican Party to stop them, and because the media is complicit in this power grab, the Democrat president of the United States of America, or shall I say the neo-Marxist Obama, has aggrandized in less than 2 months more power in this period of time than any president in history in their entire term. Why do I say that? He's taken over finance, including banking, insurance, stocks, and bonds, and mortgages, virtually in his own hands. He's trying to control the entire financial institutions of America. That alone should be sending off signals around America. Also, the White House is now attacking anyone who criticizes them in the media, whether it be a Rush Limbaugh or CNBC's Cramer. Anybody who attacks them, the government goes after. Does it not worry you that the government is attacking individual opinion in this country?
Worries the hell out of me. I see myself someday walking through the pages of, Atlas Shrugged or 1984 in reality and being.
I have another book for you to read. It's called It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis. I mentioned it on the show today. It was written in 1935. And although Sinclair Lewis was a socialist who feared the arrival on the American scene of a right-wing dictatorship, much of what he predicted would happen if right-wingers took over America is actually happening right now under Obama. So what I want to say to you is that it doesn't matter whether Obama declares himself to be a liberal or a conservative. Fundamentally, we have a dictatorship emerging. That's the point I am trying to make. It is a bipartisan statement or nonpartisan statement. Now I'll make another prediction. I predict that very soon Obama will create a crisis along the lines of the Reichstag fire. I don't know what form it will take. But I believe that once the minions are seen for what they are, Rahm Emanuel and his gang will set off a Reichstag fire in this country of some kind, and they will recall the military dictatorship of Lincoln and Stanton during the Civil War when civilian suspects were arrested without warrant. I will tell you as I sit here, I fear that every night as I go to sleep. I put nothing past these agitators who have suddenly seized control of the most powerful economy and the most powerful military on earth. No, my friends, I am losing a great deal of sleep every night because I do see this happening right before my eyes. Again, I will repeat what I just said. Mark it down, just as I predicted many things that would happen, which have happened, just as I created the phrase trickle-up poverty, which is happening before your eyes, and I gave it to John McCain in order to defeat Obama. And by the way, had John McCain taken my advice and used that in the last debate, he would have defeated Obama handily. But Obama was not defeated because the fake Republican McCain was sent up there to fail, to usher in this administration. I again tell you that there will be the equivalent of a crisis on the order of the Reichstag fire. I don't know where it will occur. I don't know how it will occur. I don't know what form it will take. But during this crisis that will be triggered by the Democrats around Obama, the gang that surrounds Obama, they will bring up Lincoln. They will recall the military dictatorship of Lincoln in other terms during the Civil War, and they will do what Lincoln did, and they will arrest civilians without warrant in the name of saving the economy or saving the government from a right-wing takeover. Mark my words, you can put that down and you can put it in bronze, not on ice. I can guarantee you that that's what these people are planning, and that's what these people will do when they become desperate enough, when they are finally seen for who they are. This is a gang, make no mistake about it. This is not as much an administration as it is a gang. The gang, again, has taken over within less than 2 months virtually all finance in the country, banking, insurance, stocks, bonds, and mortgages, all under their absolute control. That's why they will not disclose where the $2.2 trillion has gone.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Michael Savage, and here's what we've been talking about today. Geithner testifies. So Timothy Geithner, the Boy Scout, goes before Congress and testifies about Obama's plan for the socialist economy. The tax dodger gets up there and says they're going to increase revenues by increasing enforcement action to reduce tax avoidance. Too bad they didn't get to Geithner before he became Treasury Secretary. All right, play the clip.
This budget also seeks to close the tax gap. By tackling tax shelters and other efforts to abuse our tax laws, including on the international front. Over the next several months, the president will propose a series of legislative and enforcement actions to reduce tax avoidance.
Do you trust a grown man who sounds like a little boy when he speaks? Why is it that more and more of our leaders are sounding not like real men, but like metros? Is the increasing feminization of our country to blame for our crisis in leadership? We also talked about Hillary Clinton. Even Hillary Clinton is now saying that diplomacy is unlikely to reduce the threat of a nuclear Iran, and yet BO insists on talking with them as if they were sane. And now we're beginning talks with Syria as well. When are we going to learn that the enemy understands only strength and that negotiation is seen as a sign of weakness? We also talked about Iran. Did you know that according to the U.S. military, Iran now has enough nuclear material to make a bomb? But Obama still wants to negotiate with them. He even wants to give massive aid to Iran's allies, the Palestinians. What is there to negotiate? The time and date of America's destruction? Never negotiate in fear, Mr. Obama. That's what John F. Kennedy said. But there are other topics out there. 1-800-449-8255. You heard me talk about CPAC. With a lot of the fake conservatives getting up and giving speeches on getting our country back, where were the speeches on protecting our borders, our language, and our culture? Those are the true conservative values that will save our nation. Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times was at CPAC, and he joins us now with a report.
Thanks, Michael. This week, I want to talk about the conservative movement and the disarray that the movement is currently in. I was privied to be at CPAC, the annual gathering of conservatives here in Washington, D.C., over the weekend. It featured people like Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, and, of course, Rush Limbaugh. What I found to me most surprising about the CPAC event this year, I've been going to it now for many years, is I have never seen this amount of energy, enthusiasm, and determination among the conservative base. The sense that I got from almost every person that I spoke to is that Obama is taking America down a dangerous road to socialism, and they deeply fear for the future of this country. The grassroots is mobilized, they are ready, and many are talking about coming out in record numbers in the midterm elections in 2010 to stop Obama's domestic agenda dead in its tracks. The one thing that bothers me throughout this whole CPAC event that I attended is this delusion that many conservatives are under. From Newt Gingrich to Rush Limbaugh, the sentiment was that we are living in a center-right country, that conservatives form a natural majority, and all we have to do is rebrand or repackage the movement. And somehow, presto, shazam, conservatives will ride back into power in 2010 and dethrone Obama in 2012. And this, to me, is a profound myth that is going to cripple the movement. And if we don't destroy this myth, It is the road to decline, defeat, and eventually oblivion. For what Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh don't understand, because they live in a privileged life in their insular world with their adoring fans and their big contracts and their fawning sycophants and servile followers, is that the country has profoundly changed since Ronald Reagan. Throughout the entire CPAC conference, everybody was Ronald Reagan, and everybody was harking back to Ronald Reagan. Mitt Romney was Ronald Reagan. Ann Coulter, Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh is Ronald Reagan. Well, if everybody is Ronald Reagan, then nobody is Ronald Reagan. And the point that all of these people don't understand is that Ronald Reagan is a once-in-a-century kind of politician and president. He was the greatest president of the 20th century. And his greatness lay not in the fact that he was optimistic or somehow he knew how to package the conservative movement. It's because he had profound character and he understood the profound greatness of America and what America stood for in the world. What Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh do not understand is that for the last 20 years, the left has marched all the way into power. There is now a liberal revolution that has engulfed and encompassed this country. And since the 1960s, the left has been relentless in its pursuit of dominating our culture. They control the universities, the mainstream media, the arts, Hollywood. They control the public schools. They control, in other words, every institution of cultural power in this country. And now they control Congress and the White House. No amount of cheerleading, no amount of going around saying, well, if only we can be a little bit more articulate in our conservative principles, if only we can say tax cuts, limited government, and family values a little bit more effectively, somehow we will ride back into power and it will be the 1980s all over again. It won't. Because as you have pointed out again and again, and what the Washington conservative establishment does not understand, is that this country has been transformed. Language, borders, and culture. If you look at the major demographics and trends in this country, the Reagan coalition is being smashed and buried. White males and conservative evangelicals form an increasing minority in our country. You have seen, piece by piece, the creation of a leftist ethnic constituency that demands big government, that demands welfare, that demands more and more government services. In other words, they are pushing this country increasingly to the left. Just as Mexico is a socialist country, they are ultimately going to make America a socialist country. The Reagan Democrats are now long gone. They may be culturally conservative, but economically, they are opposed to free trade, and they want more big government and nationalized health care. We are losing every key component of the Reagan coalition. And what Barack Obama and the Democrats are now doing, they are slowly but surely buying off every key constituent group in this country. The real message behind the budget isn't just that it will bankrupt America. They are restitching a New Deal coalition that kept the Democrats in power for decades. And yet, as Washington burns, conservatives fiddle. Conservatives talk about reclaiming the politics and reclaiming Capitol Hill. Yet all around them, our border remains porous and unpoliced. Drug traffickers are coming in through this country. Criminals are coming in through this country. Nearly 20 million illegals have flooded this country, bringing their family members with them. Everywhere you go, more and more Americans are addicted to big government. And the point that Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh do not understand is that when Barack Obama came out with his $787 billion stimulus package, the greatest government intervention in the peacetime in our economy in history, most Americans don't care. It was nothing to them. We are now slowly becoming a socialist country. And no amount of cheerleading, no amount of artificial enthusiasm is going to change that. Unless we confront the culture. And Michael, this to me is the mother of all points. In 1776, we Americans did something that has never been done before in the history of the world. We created on this land a republic that said, in the eyes of God and in the eyes of the law, everyone is created equal and will be treated equally. This is an experiment in freedom. Yet piece by piece, over the last 60 years, liberals in this country have been dismantling that experiment. And they have used every institution of cultural and economic and political power to achieve their goals. They are now on the cusp of transforming America into a European socialist state, the very thing that would make our founding fathers roll in their grave. And here we are with conservative prima donnas at CPAC, hawking their books, going on about all we have to do is wait for the Democrats to overreach and their incompetence will launch us into power. Well, why don't they answer this fundamental question? When the Democrats are incompetent under Bill Clinton, when we had Chinagate and Filegate and Travelgate and Monica Lewinsky, what did we get? We got George W. Bush. And when we got George W. Bush, we got open borders, massive deficits, unprecedented federal involvement in education, and a prescription drug coverage that we will never be able to pay. This is what we got. In other words, Republicans became more like Democrats. So the solution is not to wait for the Democrats to make a mistake. The solution is to do what our forefathers did in 1776, and that is to take the initiative in our own hands. If conservatives are to win, the solution does not lie in Sarah Palin or Bobby Jindal or Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich or whatever candidate of the day that conservatives like to throw out. We have to take back our universities, our media, our public schools, television, Hollywood. In other words, we have to take back our country. And first and foremost, we have to say that on this country, on this soil, our borders are inviolable, that our national sovereignty is not for sale. And if you want to cross this border illegally, you are breaking the law. And we will send you back from where you came from. And we are not going to become Mexifornia. We are not going to become an appendage of Mexico and Latin America. And until conservatives understand that point, and until they realize that we are not a majority, but a minority the way our founding fathers were, when only one-third of Americans rose up against the British, they showed us that a minority that is determined, that a minority that believes in its principles, can change the history of the world. And this is now our challenge. Will we as Americans, as free men and free women, will we say, finally, no to socialism, no to bailouts to the Wall Street fat cats, no to buying off interest groups and constituencies across this country, no to the destruction of the family, no to us pushing for appeasement in Iran and in Russia and in Gaza and in the face of Islamic radicalism, that we will no longer tolerate the destruction and the abandonment of America, but that we will live up to the heritage of our forefathers. This is the new American Revolution. It is the conservative revolution. If we take our stand on this ground, Michael, we will win because we have the truth. This is Jeff Kooner at the Washington Times with his weekly special report to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Jeff. Until these issues of borders, language, and culture are taken care of, we are in real danger of losing our country. This is the Savage Nation. Savage. All right, here we go. This is what's on MichaelSavage.com today. The biggest news is the fact that trickle-up poverty is what Obama has brought to America. It's called the Obama economy. He's attacking those who earn to give to those who don't earn. That's called trickle-up poverty or Marxism. I coined that in October as a gift to John McCain, but the old fool didn't run with it because he wanted to lose the game. The next story on my website is the perp walk at CPAC, which, of course, is a classic that should be read. We then go down the page. Hillary admits U.S. diplomacy unlikely to end Iran nuke program. In other words, she's an appeaser. Gee, what else is new? Another Obama pick owes taxes, but it's okay because now that he's been caught, he'll pay up. See, that's how it works. You heard of pay to play? Well, this is pay in order to play after you're caught. Hillary puts U.S. on collision course with Israel as she pledges to press for a Palestinian state. And what did the Jewish liberal expect? Did they expect something different from the gal from Arkansas? From the New York Daily News, Harlem proves moms and dads are clamoring for school choice. From the Associated Press, Bernie Madoff, alleged scam artist, seeks to keep $7 million Manhattan penthouse and an additional $62 million in assets, which he says is not his. It's in his wife's name. Pakistan attack on Sri Lankan cricket team, echoes of Mumbai, sure. But keep appeasing them. Durbin admits race was a factor in seating Burris in the Senate. That's from WGN-TV in Chicago. Forbes says how Obama will change your taxes. The answer is those who have will give to those who have nothing. Those who have nothing will take from those who have something. In other words, they're going to punish success. From the Middle East Times, Sharia's inroads around the world. That's right, your Muslim friends. Oh yeah, they're just here because they're peaceful. Pakistan recently gave in to the pressure of Islamist militants. But Sharia is not just making inroads in Pakistan, but actually creeping into the West, and particularly in Europe, where the appeasers have nothing to say. From El Universal in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez targets media to raise his popularity. He is attacking the radio stations. He is attacking the television stations. Exactly the same playbook as Obama the Magnificent. From Newsmax, pricey new presidential helicopters not made in the U.S. of A. Did you know that? Ah, what's the difference? Why, Obama might be LBJ and not JFK. Really, LBJ, the great society that imploded? From the bottom of the page, linked to the Washington Times, a bridge to nowhere is okayed for the Everglades. Did you hear that? A provision buried inside of Congress's giant spending bill would force the government to build a bridge that a federal judge has declared a complete waste of taxpayer dollars. And you thought Obama was different? He is different. He's more corrupt than anyone in history. Sure, he's different. From the Associated Press, the Nation of Islam has embraced Obama. Why not? He espouses that what they espouse. From the Cleveland Weather Examiner, the District of Columbia is the site of a snowstorm and the largest public protest of global warming in history. Is that ironic? No, it's an example of liberalism being a serious mental disorder, disconnected from reality. I'll be right back. World turned upside down. You know, Obama, whether you like him or not, really has created the most corrupt administration in modern history in this country. Why do I say that? He's tried to nominate a total of five tax cheats to date. The most recent, Ron Kirk, Obama's trade rep, owes $10,000 in back taxes. Hillary, starting to negotiate with Syria. Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of England, is bringing Britain's brand of socialism and appeasement to America, and wants to start an international New Deal with Barack Obama, meaning you should bail out Britain and the rest of the world. You know, in 1781, when the British Army, under the command of General Cornwallis, surrendered to the Americans at Yorktown, the British Army played a tune called The World Turned Upside Down. It seems to me as though it's time to play it again, Sam. Obama has turned the world upside down in less than 100 days. Obama is a natural disaster. The only thing that can save us now is an act of God. There was once a time when only conspiracy theorists talked about the approach of a one-world socialist dictatorship, remember? You thought it was crazy? Well, now it's taken for granted. In another age, they used to talk about creeping socialism. Today, socialism isn't creeping. It's leaping. Socialism is growing by leaps and bounds in the world of politics, the world of economics, and the world of our culture. And speaking of our so-called culture, the Hollywood radicals have once again demonstrated that it wants to turn the world upside down. Annette Bening, the failed actress, and a group of other Hollywood failures have gone to Iran to participate in a cultural exchange, something that would make Joseph Stalin proud. In the pictures that have been released from the event, Annette Bening is seen wearing a headscarf. Once again, Hollywood has placed itself under the mental yoke of a dictatorship and expects America to go along with it. Once again, we see the strange attraction that the soulless ghouls in Hollywood have for fascistic regimes. And yet Annette Bening goes to Iran, a country where they would stone her to death for the movies that she's made if she lived there. So what will come of this meeting? Will Annette Bening convert to Islam? Will we suddenly see more films with oppressed Iranian protagonists? Will Iran's film industry get a bailout? Nobody really knows. What we do know is that Hollywood is once again cavorting with the enemy. Hollywood has demonstrated, as if it weren't clear enough from the Oscars, that would rather honor tyranny than freedom. They would rather honor hatred than freedom. Hollywood is providing cover for the enemy by taking a show tour of their film studios, just as was done in the 1930s. See how well the women are treated in Iran. See how good the conditions really are in this cinematic Theresienstadt. They would rather praise the Hitler of Iran than bless the country they came from, than bless the country that gave them the freedom not to have to cover themselves, not to have to be treated like cattle. They are turning our culture upside down. Obama is turning our country upside down. The foreign policy challenges for our new administration are starting to build. With Russia starting to rebuild the former Soviet Union, and Obama talking about getting out of Iraq and getting into Afghanistan, the tensions are certainly building. Iran, again, is close to going nuclear if they haven't already. The little man from Iran has already said there is nothing the U.S. can do, and they'll be going nuclear despite our desires. K.T. McFarland from KTMcFarland.com joins us now to talk about Iran and their nuclear program.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you again. You know, something really interesting happened over the weekend. Admiral Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, declared that we have concluded that Iran now has enough enriched uranium to make a nuclear weapon. This echoes what the UN Nuclear Watchdog Agency had said a couple of weeks ago and what the International Institute for Strategic Studies had also said, that Iran now has enough enriched uranium for a nuclear weapon. Now, to have a nuclear weapon, you need three things. First, you need the enriched uranium, which we see they now have or will soon have. Second, you need a missile to deliver that weapon. Now, we know Iran has tested a 1,000-mile range missile called the Shahab 3. So we know they have that. The last thing they need, though, is the blueprint. We don't know whether they have it or not. We know they've been working on it. And we do know that the Pakistani nuclear physicist, Dr. A.Q. Khan, father of Pakistan's nuclear weapons, has sold that technology to Iran in the past. We also know that he has been under house arrest for the last several years. But 2 weeks ago, interestingly, he was released. So we don't know what he sold to Iran. We've never questioned him. We don't know whether he's back in business selling to Iran again. But you have to assume that he will make that connection now that he's free. So Iran is on its way. It says that it wants nuclear reactors because they want nuclear energy, which is basically a joke. It's laughable for a nation awash in oil and natural gas. I mean, Iran flares off more energy from its oil and gas wells than the potential power could be generated by all of Iran's declared nuclear facilities were dedicated to nuclear energy. So don't believe that. They are on their way to getting nuclear weapons. A lot of experts believe that within 2 years they will have a nuclear arsenal. They'll certainly have one by the end of Obama's first term. And it could well be that within the next year they'll get to the point of no return, where they figure that no amount of carrots, no amount of sticks is going to deter them, because they know being a nuclear power has such enormous importance to them. So let's think about it. Well, what does it mean?
Well, the liberals say, why do we care? Iran is in another part of the world.
Well, we care for a couple of reasons. One, Israel. We've got a stake in Israel's future. And Iran has said time and again its goal is to destroy Israel. Nuclear weapons give them the ability to do so, or at a minimum, to get concessions by threatening to do so. And second, a nuclear Iran will set off an arms race, a nuclear arms race in the single most unstable part of the world. Iran is Shiite and Persian, and no friend to the Sunni Arab countries in the Middle East. So if Iran does go nuclear, we can expect that Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Turkey, and maybe even Syria will want their own nuclear weapons. We believe Israel already has nuclear weapons. So if Iran gets them, it's like throwing a match into a room full of gasoline. Third, Iran is already the bully on the block in the Middle East. It's supporting Shiite insurgents in Iraq, sponsoring terrorist groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. And with nuclear weapons, Iran will have the muscle behind its ambitions to establish a Tehran-dominated caliphate throughout the Persian Gulf. And we care about that because that's where a majority of the world's oil transits. So, for example, Iran could make demands on Israel or on the Sunni states or on the U.S., which it could threaten to back up with nuclear weapons. Now, maybe the odds aren't great that they'd ever use nuclear weapons, but it's not the odds that worries people, it's the stakes. Again, it's sort of like playing a game of chicken with nukes.
So what's next?
Well, Obama has yet to unveil his Iran policy. They're conducting a comprehensive review of all aspects of Middle East policy, and Iran is just one element. But most indications so far are that Obama is considering a more aggressive diplomacy with sweeter carrots, bigger sticks than we've tried in the past. But the problem is the clock is ticking. Most experts believe that Iran will have that nuclear weapon within 2 years. And if they reach that point of no return within the year, where no amount of carrots and sticks or renewed diplomacy is going to stop them, well, every month we wait, every time we say, well, let's talk about it, let's get together, we'll see you soon, well, that just delays it. And the whole time, they're continuing their nuclear program. Because Iran knows that its ability to get what it wants in the world goes up exponentially if it has nuclear weapons. So the next thing, too, though, is Israel's got to look at Iran and look at the United States and say, well, if Obama's not going to be able to stop Iran, we've got to do it because Israel has to protect itself. So the question then becomes is Israel under a new government, a more conservative government under Bibi Netanyahu, are they looking to attack Israel? I mean, Israel attack Iran. And I think you've got to assume that if Israel concludes that the United States isn't going to stop Iran and that Iran is on its way to nuclear weapons, Israel will do to Iran what it did to Iraq in 1981 and Syria in 2007, and that's bomb its nuclear facilities, even though Israel probably realizes such an attack will not be completely successful. So what are we going to do? Well, I think we have to hope that Obama figures something out soon, because if there is no derailment of that program, then we're going to be faced with a choice not too long from now of either standing by while Israel bombs Iran, starting a whole cascade of catastrophic events in the Middle East, or letting Iran get the bomb. And those are two terrible alternatives. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, KT. The worst thing Obama can do right now is sit around and do nothing. Iran isn't listening to his pretty speeches, and action is going to be needed very soon. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Eric Holder's comments on Americans being cowards about race upset the nation. It mocked what our country has accomplished and how far we have come as a nation. Eric Holder's comments seem to hit on a theme for this administration that we have been hearing from many associated with Obama. Race, race, race. Joining us now is Selwyn Duke to talk about race, race, race on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Great to be with you again. Michael, everyone's been talking about Attorney General Eric Holder's stupid comment about Americans being racial cowards. But it occurs to me that the one he ought to lecture is his boss, Barack Obama. After all, Obama seems to have no problem with bigotry. As an example, you might remember the presidential inauguration benediction, during which Obama allowed Reverend Joseph Lowery to say the following outdated prayer, quote, "Help us work for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will embrace what is right." Yes, when white will embrace what is right. Now, this is an example of anti-white prejudice, or caucophobia, and whites have been demonized for a long time now. For example, it's not correct to say that history textbooks, documentaries, and entertainment inundate us with stories about slavery and civil rights abuses. No, they inundate us with stories about whites' practice of slavery and abuse of civil rights. There are movies such as Roots and Mississippi Burning, but none of note about the Aztecs or Shaka Zulu's domination of neighboring peoples, or the current African slave trade, or Zimbabwean strongman Robert Mugabe's persecution of whites. Then, relating the American history guidelines of a prominent textbook publisher, author Diane Ravitch writes, quote, "European Americans, the guidelines suggest, were uniquely responsible for bigotry and exploitation in all human history, unquote.
That's just nonsense.
Yeah, Michael, it is nonsense, but unfortunately, it permeates school textbooks. While featured prominently are the sins of whites, other sins are, well, whitewashed. For instance, due to interest group pressure, such as that applied by Muslim activists, examples of slavery practiced by non-whites are sanitized. This, despite the fact that Muslim North Africans did at one time capture young white and black boys, castrate them, and sell them into slavery. And this bias is a continuation of decades of anti-white propaganda of the kind embodied in Susan Sontag's famous 1967 line, quote, "The white race is the cancer of human history," unquote. It's an idea that's taken hold. Now, since Holder wants us to be bolder, and since we have the president's preacher talking about the black, brown, yellow, red, and white, I'll bravely mount a defense. Yeah, I know, Michael. I could change from white to blue, holding my breath, waiting. Now, obviously, this defense must start with slavery, an issue that's now an obsession with much of black America. For example, I once attended a gathering where there was a certain guest, a rather outgoing black fellow who was very good at relating every topic, from the meaningful to the mundane, to America's slavery. It was as if he could channel Kunta Kinte in every conversation. Yet, the reality of slavery is that, along with prostitution, it's one of the world's oldest institutions. It's mentioned in the Bible and Quran, and every major civilization has practiced it. And, if we're to believe history and Afrocentrists, and I suppose you can't believe both, the ancient Egyptians were black and enslaved Jews. Moreover, the Islamic slave trade enslaved at least as many Africans as did the Europeans, and African tribes themselves had slaves and sold them to both civilizations. Additionally, while Americans think of a black person when hearing the word slave, the term itself is derived from the word Slav. This is because so many Slavs were sold into slavery by conquering peoples. But talking about the history of bondage, note something else. It's this startling fact. While whites weren't the first ones to practice slavery, they were the first ones to abolish it. And let's be clear about this. Slavery was accepted. It was the status quo. It was an institution whose origin was shrouded in the mists of time. It was unquestioned. That is, until Europeans said no more. It was not Africans who effected this bold and unprecedented social change. It was not South Americans. It was not Asians. It was not American Indians. It was not Aborigines. It was Europeans, that cancer of human history. And they were just as white then as they are today. And this historical triumph has nothing to do with race, but that's a discussion for a different day. For now, know that if whites can be demonized without explanation for being one of many groups to enslave Africans, they can be credited without explanation for being the first group to outlaw the enslavement of anyone. What is the real legacy of slavery? Well, let's think about it. Many lament blacks' economic state in America, claiming it's part of slavery's legacy. But where would blacks be were it not for slavery? The answer is Africa, where people's economic state is far, far worse than that of American blacks. In other words, there's no reason to agonize over an event, even an evil one, responsible for your presence in a country that offers its citizens unprecedented rights and standard of living. The point is, most people who arrived on American shores were driven here by some kind of persecution. But whatever the reason, thank God we're in the land of opportunity and not languishing in a slum in Asia, South America, Africa, or Eastern Europe. So, it's ironic, but that some blacks were brought here in chains yesterday ensured that their characteristic white fault. Yet the truth is just the opposite. In reality, racial prejudice is probably found least among whites due to political correctness. Think about it. Most white children are raised today with the idea that it's profoundly immoral to be prejudiced. And remember, It was mainly white people who originated, promoted, and funded sensitivity training classes, tolerance programs, and multiculturalism.
Well, it's these programs that promote racism.
Yeah, I know, Michael, actually. Come to think of it, I may start hating white people myself. Now, while I consider these abominations to be worse than what they ostensibly remedy, this brings us to a relevant question. Can you think of another group that has gone to the point of self-flagellation to purge prejudice from its ranks? Huh? Heck, with how we're beating each other up over this, no one really has to worry at all about whites. We're all black and blue. And then there's the matter of white achievement. Most of what makes the lives of all races better today, modern science and medicine, our luxuries, Western art, literature, legal institutions, etc., is the handiwork of whites. Oh, this is simply a matter of circumstance, of opportunity, of a twist of fate, you say? Perhaps. Again, this isn't the time to discuss the ways and whys. Suffice it to say for now that if whites can be ridiculed for their transgressions, they can be recognized for their triumphs. Yet, despite all this, caucophobia is encouraged, and the hypocrisy is stark. The left warns against making even valid generalizations or entertaining intellectual discussions about group differences. Even positive stereotyping is off limits. We can't say blacks are better athletes, even though the sports arena may bear witness to this. We can't say Asians are more intelligent, even though they have the highest average IQ of any major racial group. We can't say Latinos are good dancers. But when it's whites, even baseless negative stereotypes are okay. A Reverend Lowry can imply that whites are uniquely immoral. They can be portrayed as the bane of man, as the cancer of human history. And it's ho-hum. And such demonization is far from harmless. History teaches that consistently scapegoated and dehumanized groups almost invariably end up suffering persecution. And given that current demographic trends indicate whites will become a minority in America during the lifetimes of most of the people hearing this, and given that even majorities sometimes are tyrannized, as the Spartans' enslavement of the Helots proved, it's foolish to dismiss the peril posed by mainstreaming caucophobia. Yet, sadly, that's exactly what's happening.
Thanks, Selwyn Duke. History needs to be impartial, not promotional. It isn't something that should be changed to push an agenda.
Michael, thank you for having me on the show again, and God bless you and your audience.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.